Welcome to the PI Podcast, Political Insights for the Palaging Inis. I'm your host, Matt, and with me is my co-host, political scientist, meme lord, and the person who did not compose the Belgian techno anthem, Pump Up the Jam. Boom, 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 boom. Borge.
The reference is just way off. I don't even know, but then again, Euro techno music. Okay. PI nyo, PI nating lahat, 40 years of service.
That's actually a reference to a show, actually. You know, Conk on Earth? Anyway. So yeah, it's a meme. Anyway, it's a new Rick Roll. But anyway, so welcome to this new episode, which is going to be released in the latest anniversary of the EDSA People Power Movement / Revolution, depending on how you look at it. So, of course, we've talked about this topic in episodes before, but now it is, we're talking about in the context of the new Marcos regime. So it hits different. So I don't know, Borge, any initial comments about this topic while, you know, new context? Yeah.
It's just weird that it still exists. So
yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see. We're recording it before the celebration. So I'm suspending any more comments. I am looking forward to see what the new president would do during the day itself.
Yeah. Just take note, the great irony, just, you know, if it hasn't set into a lot of people, is that, of course, the first EDSA movement or the first event was kicked out Ferdinand Marcos Sr. and now his son, Ferdinand Marcos Jr.,
is in Malacanang.
So does that necessarily invalidate what happened back then or destroy what it earned? Or is there a way to maybe, what's the word, salvage what's left? Or do we need something new? You know, do we need a new story? And this is very important. And now we have a very, very important and very preeminent guest to talk about this topic. So without further ado, let's introduce our guest. So he is a professor at the Department of Political Science and the Department of International Studies at the De La Salle University, Manila. He is the chief of party for Participate, a non-partisan and pro-democracy coalition composed of the Ateneo School of Government and La Salle Institute of Governance. And he has written many articles and publications on the topics of elections, democracy, and Philippine politics and political parties, and the host of the YouTube channel Talk Politics, and of course, a mentor and role model for us junior political scientists. So please welcome the Papa Bear of Philippine Political Science, Dr. Julio Tihangki. Welcome, sir. Woo! Thank you very much for joining us.
Hello, Matt and Borge. Wow, Papa Bear. Huh? I've been called a lot of things, but I think it's the first time I've been referred to as Papa Bear. Anyways, finally, after several attempts, it's great to finally guest in your very trending podcast. Huh? Congratulations, Matt and Borge.
Thank you, sir.
And thank you for taking time out of your very busy schedule to be with us here to discuss this very important topic.
Yes, sir.
So, sir, let's start first. So, I mean, with all your experience on many years in political science, our first question is, kailan kayo maglolo?
After me. Napakagandang tanong na yan. It's ang tanong na yan, kapatid yan ng tanong na how are you related to, no? So, I grew up basically being asked the question, how are you related to the Chief Justice Claudio Tihangki?
Mm-hmm.
So, well, now at least some of my relatives are being asked, how are you related to Tihangki, the political analyst?
Wow. Sikat na kayo, sir.
Nice.
Di naman, okay. Slight lang, di ba?
But actually, okay, the original question is, out of all your years in political science as both an observer and a scholar, and how important was EDSA People Power Revolution as an event and as a narrative to Philippine politics?
Yeah, well, I belong to the Star Wars generation, no? And it's not the Star Wars of recent years. In original trilogy, 1977. No? But if you will recall yung sequel trilogy, no? The first movie in the sequel trilogy, The Force Awakens, no? Set several years after the fall of the Empire, Han Solo had this particular line. No? Sabi niya, it's true. The Force, the Jedi, all of it, it's all true. And in a way, we're in the same situation, no? Several decades after the fall of the Galactic Empire, people have forgotten what the struggle was all about, no? Some looking for quick fixes have even developed a perverse nostalgia for a return to order and security offered by the Empire. Others have also questioned the narrative of the fall of the Empire, and even they have begun to revise history. No? I belong to a generation who knew no other president for at least the first two decades of our lives than Ferdinand Marcos Sr. No? We lived through authoritarianism. And for most of us, EDSA was the culmination of a protracted struggle to restore democracy in the Philippines, no matter how flawed this so-called democracy is, no? But at least my generation really stake our lives. We were part of that struggle, and we did our best to restore that democracy. The democracy that some of our, you know, it's sad to say, no? Some of our countrymen have taken for granted, no? So yung mga nasa nakakapag-post ng kahit ano sa YouTube, sa TikTok, sa Facebook, parte yan ng democracy na pinaglaban namin sa EDSA. No? But then again, I'll not be surprised if those belonging to the younger generations, no, would counter my own life experience, no, based on what they have gathered from YouTube and TikTok. No. Yun, 'di ba? So, 'yun, no. So, but beyond my personal experience, no, EDSA can be viewed from different perspectives, no. First, from a triumphalist, even romanticized view of a people's triumph that inspired a wave of democratic revolutions around the world. And you cannot take that moment away from the Philippines, right? I was in college already, I think 1986. Yeah, I was in college 1986. I was a Poli Sci major in 1986. We were part of the EDSA revolution, and yeah, that was a, you know, a crowning glory for the Filipino people, and it, you know, it sparked a wave of democratic revolutions that led all the way to the fall of the Berlin Wall, no? Second, it's a testament to the potency of civil resistance and unarmed insurrection, no, for fostering change, no. Yung sinasabi nga doon sa kantang mapayapang paraan ng pagbabago, no. And you know, who would have thought, no, that it could happen, and it did happen. And in the Philippines, it happened not once but twice, no. So yeah, that's people power, no. Third, it can be viewed within the perspective of political time, no? And I've written quite a lot on this. In fact, I'm co-authoring a book about this, no, with Professor Mark Thompson of the City University of Hong Kong, The Cycle of Presidential Regimes and Narratives, no? And when we speak of regimes, no, these are political configurations that include ideology, interests, and institution. But long story short, no, since we have weak ideological articulation in the country, our politics have relied on narratives or the stories that politicians or even presidents tell. So, for example, the Marcos narrative of making the nation great, no, repudiated the post-war neo-colonial regime that spawned him. Cory Aquino's reformist good governance narrative repudiated the Marcos narrative and established what has been known as the EDSA regime, which restored formal democracy, not consolidated, but simply the formal trappings of democracy in the country. No? So that's the story, no, of EDSA. No? So yeah, that's it. No.
Follow-up question, siguro. Again, we do have the EDSA narrative. It's there. Again, the counter-narratives have also been there ever since. Curious question, kailan yung unang napansin yung mga counter-narrative against EDSA?
Ah, very interesting. It started as a, you know, parang sa sunog, di ba? Yung it started as an ember, no, that grew gradually into a big fire, no. I remember after EDSA, no, a faction of the EDSA forces, no, that successfully ousted the dictator Ferdinand Marcos, started questioning the very narrative that brought the EDSA coalition into power. And that faction is the faction of then Defense Minister Enrile and his followers in the Reform the Armed Forces movement. And there was this former defense ministry reporter for the now defunct Times Journal newspaper by the name of Cecil Arillo, no, who wrote his version, which is basically the version of Defense Minister Juan Ponce Enrile, of the 4 days of EDSA. No? And from that perspective, it was really about RAM. It was really about Enrile. No? So we should be thankful to Enrile, Honasan, and the entire RAM for EDSA. No? And that's the version, no? So that was the beginning of what we can call as the counter EDSA narrative, which you know, it took time really to percolate, no, and grow, no, until later on, no, as in most transitions, the democratic transitions, no, and looking at the experience and even the literature of democratic transitions in Latin America, we can see the cycle of how the former allies, no, who took down the former authoritarian, and usually a successful political revolution, no, such as EDSA, involves faction of the former regime, no, a breakaway faction, no. In most cases, political revolutions such as just like EDSA, no, are successful because there is a faction of the ruling regime that broke away and joined the opposition, no, and formed the new winning coalition, no. So ganun ang nangyari, no, and in due time, nag-away-away na itong EDSA coalition na ito until nagkaroon na nung EDSA dos, no. Nung EDSA dos, sabi nga 'di ba ni Marx, no, history repeats itself. First as an event, second as a farce, no. Yung second people power, while it was truly amazing that it happened, it's like what yung kanta ni Britney Spears, no, palagi ko sinasabi sa mga estudyante ko, no. Oops, we did it again, no? So, 'di ba? So, parang tapos may third attempt pa, 'di ba, yung EDSA tres na ng mga ng masa naman ng mga pro ERAP forces, no. So doon pa lang, no, nakita natin na it is, while it was historic the first time, the second time it was luck, no, perhaps, no, na it succeeded, and the third one was a total failure. It is not good for institution building and long-term political stability, right? Because if we keep ousting our leadership, our political system through extra-constitutional, extra-institutional means, it will only result in instability. So, and then with the failure, the frustrations that happened after EDSA, no, further fueled this anti-EDSA narrative, no, which became the Duterte narrative, no? which you know, finally really started this entire erosion of the EDSA project. And this is what you call the EDSA fatigue, right?
Yes. Actually, before we get into that, you know, I think we're all in the mood to critique EDSA, maybe forget it. But I do want to ask, to be fair about it, like, what do you think is the most important positive legacy of the People Power Revolution. And of course, it's the magical event that everyone still has nostalgia for sometimes. But maybe anything that's lasting, you know, afterwards, you know, what? Yeah, is there anything positive? Yes.
Yes. If I remember, no. When I first read Leloy Claudio's Taming People's Power, the very first thing he asked, in his book, his parents were both seasoned activists, and very critical of the system. And yet, when Cory Aquino died, this ushered in that brief period of yellow nostalgia, no, EDSA nostalgia. And it was all strange for Leloy, no? Why, no? And that spurred his interest in deconstructing the EDSA narrative.
Mm-hmm.
When I was reading it, I felt like Han Solo nga, no? Uh-huh. Yung sabi ko, I was there. Okay. I lived through it, right?
Okay.
You would never understand. It's not kasi nga ang kahirapan ngayon para sa aming medyo thunders, no? Pag sinabi namin nung panahon namin, nagagalit kaagad yung mga Gen Z at Gen Y na ano kami, tinatawag kaming boomers or whatnot, no? Mm-hmm. But in reality, we lived through it, no? Mm-hmm. I lived through it. So it's difficult to it's not really difficult to explain. Mm-hmm. For example, I was 7 years old. I saw the Plaza Miranda bombing live on TV.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my first political socialization. Imagine at the age of 7. No? Mm-hmm. Diba? So napanood ko yun. And then I remember vividly the booming baritone voice of Ferdinand Marcos declaring martial law. Mm-hmm. I remember all of it. I remember that hot Sunday afternoon when I was at my neighbor's house. His dad was a pilot, just got back and said, "Binaril nila si Ninoy." I lived through that. I was there during the huge funeral for Ninoy. I march at EDSA. I did all the stuff. No, so I lived through it. No, so parang I was part of it. So I know what it meant. No, perhaps the failure really was, I don't know. I am also critical of what happened after EDSA, but we should at least separate. What happened after, no, the so-called shortcomings of the EDSA regime,
okay,
from the EDSA event itself, right? Because as I mentioned earlier, it was really a triumphant moment for the Filipino people, and it inspired a wave of democratic revolution, and it is a testament to the potency of civil resistance and unarmed insurrection. No, so if only for those. We should remember EDSA.
Yeah, I think that is the challenge to it right now. I believe is to separate the regime from the event itself. It's like throwing the baby with the bathwater. So
yeah,
right, di ba? Yeah, kasi kung ano man yung pagkukulang ng EDSA after, ito ay kadahilanan na rin sa ano, no, sa maraming factors, no, like. Yeah, yung tinatawag ng EDSA fatigue, no? Yung was brought about by the perceived and often felt sentiment that EDSA failed to deliver us to the promised land of development and prosperity. However, this inability to adequately address the legacies of authoritarianism have impacted on the overall consolidation of democratic gains. Kasi there are three key variables why we failed to consolidate the gains we made at EDSA, di ba? I identify three factors, no. First is the resilience of the previous regime. The Marcos dynasty never left. They were on exile, di ba?
Yeah.
But they still had the resource, no? They had the money. They had the connection. They had their their allies back here. who simply bided their time, no? The dynasty and their allies started aligning with the administration of the day, the ruling party of the day, started wearing yellow for a while, no, and just bided their time, no, but they never left, no. And from day one of their exile, they had only one objective in mind, right? To return to Malacañang, no. Second, the institutional footprints of authoritarianism, no. This is in the literature, particularly in political parties, is what is known as authoritarian diaspora. No, the formerly members of the ruling regime and its ruling party successfully transitioning to the new democratic regime. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So from former authoritarians to new Democrats, di ba? And in the Philippines, it's much worse, right? Because of our history of party switching, yung balimbingan politics, and clientelism, patron-client, and clan politics, dynastic politics, it has become worse. And this is what I term as authoritarian contamination. No, imagine PDP Laban, for example. No, PDP Laban was a merger of two staunchly anti-Marcos political parties, the Partido Democratico ng Pilipinas founded by Aquilino Pimentel and the Lakas ng Bayan founded by Ninoy Aquino himself, no? And then it merged as PDP Laban, and it was the party of Corazon Aquino in the 1986 na presidential election. And guess what happened? No, they supported Bongbong Marcos, right? Oh. So, di ba? Di ba? Parang, di ba? So parang bakit ganun, di ba? And then Lakas Christian Muslim Democrat. The Lakas there is Lakas ng EDSA, no? And yet it's one of its leader is I think it's president right now is the speaker. Martin Romualdez.
Oh, gosh.
A member of the... So, you know, but I don't know. Tayo lang bang mga political analysts at political scientists ang nakakapansin ito? No? Yung iba nga, hindi na baliwala na yun. But it should matter, right? So, third, yung the mode of democratic transition. No? It was still elite-led. No? While... while we transition from authoritarianism to democracy, a segment of the former authoritarians were part of the transition and managed to wiggle themselves back into the new democratic institution. So one wouldn't be surprised why we failed to consolidate democracy, di ba? And for somebody like me, who have been pushing for political and electoral reform since I was in college, no, it has become really a very tiring, no, you know, mission, no? Vocation, in fact, no. So kaya nga, eh, no. So the sad reality is that EDSA was not a social revolution, but a political revolution. No? It can even be labeled as a restoration of the pre-martial law elite democracy that spawned Marcos in the first place.
That's actually a lot to take in. I think I'm still shocked that the political party is really changing alliances, that the same party that supported Corazon Aquino supported BBM. So, yeah. I suppose from there, well, you mentioned already EDSA fatigue. And of course, it's on the level of political parties. You know, it didn't really translate to policy. But I was wondering... You've coined this term, I think, during the election of Duterte. I'm curious to know, like, maybe when did it really start? You know, EDSA fatigue amongst the consciousness of people. You know, when did it start being, you know, felt? And what do you think are its causes amongst the, at least in the populace? You know,
The transition was turbulent because of the coup attempts, no? and the instability, no? But with the successful smooth transition of power from Aquino to Fidel Ramos, no, it was the beginning of consolidation, no, of democracy. And then the second smooth transition of transfer of power from Ramos to Joseph Estrada. The legitimation crisis, no, reappeared after EDSA DOS, and that was the mistake of having a second people power revolution. Because had we just let the institutional mechanism
work
at that time, we might have a different outcome, no, but it would have damaged our political infrastructure in such a way, no, because while there was a transfer, the Supreme Court even had to resort to some legal legal maneuvers in order to justify EDSA DOS, no, of course, we know what happened after that. EDSA Tres, and then the populist counter narrative gained traction.
Yes.
And Gloria, despite the fact that she managed to finish her term, no, and in fact she promised not to seek a re-election, but she broke that promise, she ran, and then of course she ran against a very popular populist, the king of Filipino movies, FPJ, Fernando Poe Jr., and then that was a contested election with Hello Garcia and all that, and we never recovered from that, no, that entire fiasco. That so despite the fact that GMA completed her term, and despite the fact that she was a quite competent president, she never recovered from the legitimacy question, no, in the 10 years of her administration. And then after that, no, so people got tired of issues of corruption, alleged corruption under the Arroyo administration. Then suddenly, Tita Cory died. Then a wave of yellow nostalgia swept the country. And then, of course, there was this senator, no, who did not have any plans of seeking the presidency. He wanted his best friend to seek the presidency. But destiny, or what Machiavelli calls fortuna, no, suddenly pushed him, no, in the no. And then, of course, the 2010 presidential election and the victory of Noynoy Aquino, somehow, no, people thought that he would be the one to bring back balance to the force, right?
Yes.
Right? So people place all their hopes with the yellow nostalgia, with the EDSA nostalgia, and people thought Noynoy would bring back balance. But after the midterms, the series of fiasco, Mama Sapano, and all the other issues that the controversial issues, Yolanda, Mama Sapano, and all the others, started, of course, to provide fuel to the rekindling of the counter EDSA narrative. And this was the time when it was no longer Cecile Arillo was writing all these counter narratives, but even the likes of Rigoberto Bobby Tiglao and others, no? And even our esteemed senior colleague, no, Tonton Contreras, no, started writing all these counter EDSA narratives, no? So, and this was the beginning, no? And then it took one guy, no? Sabi nga ni isa pa nating kasama, no, our other colleague, si Clive Argueles, no, the Marcos nostalgia can be attributed to Duterte's quote, ito sabi ni Klib, no? Disrupting, devaluing, delegitimizing the rituals of EDSA.
No?
That was the Duterte project. No? And this was reinforced by Duterte's decision to allow the burial of the late strongman in the National Heroes Cemetery. And I've always been saying, especially during the election coverage, that Duterte played John the Baptist to the second coming of the Marcoses. Diba? So, siya yung John the Baptist to the second coming of the Marcoses. So, kumbaga, but of course, may problema na talaga yung EDSA narrative to begin with. No? Kasi, sabi rin ng mga ibang scholars, including Leloy, no? Claudio, you know, a number of scholars have explained how the narrative of the 1986 People Power Uprising at EDSA has been appropriated by the Aquinos, the Catholic Church, and their yellow elite supporters into a semi-religious national myth of good defeating evil and bringing back righteous democracy to the land. No? So yung mga tinatawag ngayon na elitista na yung mga ibang kaibigan natin na tinatawag sa kanila dilawan or kakamping, no? May pagka elitist ang tingin, tingin sa mga masa ay bobotante, yung mga ganon, no? So ngayon ang nakikita kasi natin, battle of myths, no? Myth making, so medyo tagilid ang EDSA narrative ngayon dahil ang nakaupo mga Marcos, nakabalik na sila. Di ba? So it's quite interesting, like you said, Matt, earlier, no? The irony of history, no? In fact, it's the height of, well, the first irony is the most polarizing political brand has appropriated unity, di ba? Diba? Second, on the 50th anniversary of the Declaration of Martial Law by Ferdinand Marcos Sr., the sitting president is Ferdinand Marcos Jr., right?
Oh.
Diba? And third, this will be the first EDSA celebration in which the president, who's obliged to mention about something about the event, right, is a Marcos, no? So it's really interesting kasi napansin naman natin with President BBM, no? Even during the campaign, no? He speaks with forked tongue, no? He speaks of unity, but his followers would attack anyone and everyone who is against against their idol, right? And then you know, he respects he just mentioned that he respects the 1987 Constitution, di ba? He acknowledged the Constitution. And in fact, he even mentioned that CHACHA or charter change is not on top of his agenda. Di ba? So it's a respect of the EDSA regime pa rin, no? People thought that he would initiate the total repudiation of the EDSA regime and introduce a new republic. Diba? Diba? So the end of the EDSA Republic and the beginning of, but no, he's sticking with the Constitution. No? I think he's practical enough to think that it's not worth his time, no? Because it's not his objective, right? But at the same time, his family is silently supporting a culture war, no? With films like Made in Malacanang or Ninoy Martyr or Murderer, di ba? So, you know, there's that respect for, some token respect for EDSA, and at the same time, they're trying, it's their time to get their story or narrative out there, right?
So would you say it's a means for them to try to put EDSA in a place that would not eliminate it, but would not more or less be a threat?
that is the smart way of doing it.
Yeah. Diba? Appropriating, so, it, sir.
Appropriating it.
Diba? Yeah. Diba? Yeah. So, totally opposite of Duterte's project of totally delegitimizing the rituals of EDSA or even devaluing it. Diba? Sabi nga ni Cleve. Diba? So, a smart way of doing it. And then, you know, I think that's his style, no? Leadership style, even in his foreign policy, parang ganun ang nakikita natin, di ba? So, kasi the Marcos narrative can be framed in three acts, no? Di ba? Etong present generation ng mga Marcoses, no? First is the defense of the Marcos legacy and wealth, no? The so-called golden age, nung panahon namin, di ba? 2-1 ang palitan ng peso at dollar, di ba? Yung mga ganun, di ba? Fairy tales about lost gold, no? The, the source of the Marcos wealth was the Yamashita treasure, no? And then the promise of the distribution of the Taliano gold. Wala na yata tayong nadidinig sa Taliano gold after the inauguration. No? Di ba? Bakit nawala bigla? The second is offense. They take offense at their ouster and Marcos Jr.'s vice presidential defeat. No, we were the victims. No, and that's again a historic irony. Imagine a Marcos, no, claiming that he was cheated. Di ba? Diba? So how ironic, no? Pero we are now at the third act, no? So if the first was defense of the legacy and wealth, second is offense at their ouster, the third act is redemption. It is part of their destiny to complete his father's mission of making the nation great again. And I think that is his main goal, no, in the 6 years that is given, unless he you know, he succumbs to the temptation of the dark side just like his father, di ba? How very Star Wars ang aking metaphor.
Actually, I love how you made it so elegantly, like in a thread of historical events. I do want to maybe go back a bit though, because it all feels a bit inevitable, you know, in that logical sequence. But I'm curious though, when you look at the Noynoy Aquino regime, you know, from 2010 onwards, you know, the last, let's say, victory of the EDSA regime and narrative, you know, his regime in particular was, of course, mixed, but it wasn't outright bad. In fact, there were some people say that the economy was doing quite well. Is there what do you say, what needed to be done maybe to maybe plug that the rising counter narrative, like what needed to be done to maybe prevent this turning point, you know? I mean,
wisdom of hindsight.
Yes,
wisdom of hindsight is that Noynoy, you know, God bless his soul, fumbled in handling the Mama Sapano. I think of all the controversies that happened in the second half of his administration, that was really the one that you know, here is a guy who, in which thousands, in fact millions of Filipinos went out for the funeral procession of both his father and mother. And yet he did not even take time out to visit the victims, the dead soldiers of Mama Sapan, right? So, you know, it's a different level, di ba? Parang beyond politics then, di ba?
Yeah.
So, and that really destroyed the narrative of, you know, the reformist narrative of the Aquinos, di ba? You know, trust me, I'm good, I will die for you, di ba? Di ba? Parang Christ-like na ano, di ba? Death and resurrection. Pero yun nga eh, and sadly, no, that's it, no. So I think Mama Sapan was one of those that really affected the EDSA narrative, no. And since EDSA narrative was, you know, closely linked to the Aquino narrative, no. That totally. And then this was the time in which social media was becoming darker, with with trolling and disinformation and misinformation.
Vloggers.
And, yeah, and you know, and it was really a bad combination that really. And then, of course, it resulted in the rise of the Punisher, no? The Duterte, mm-hmm. you know, which further disrupted another 6 years. No?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, if there's one thing with the BBM, no, it's at least he restored the presidency to its presidential style, right?
Mm-hmm.
Formal and, you know, stately
partially predictable.
Following the script.
even boring, yeah. Right? Kasi sabi ko nga, BBM is turning out to be as benign as Noy Noy. Ah. See what I did there? Benign.
Ah. Wow. Okay.
So, parang you just show up, you just read your script well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Si Noy Noy lang was reading it. Script in Filipino, di ba? Mm-hmm. Eloquently, di ba? And well, with BBM naman, he's so eloquent with his baritone voice, di ba? So yeah, and then just appoint all the competent technocrats, di ba?
Mm-hmm.
And let, you know, and just ride through the term, di ba? So yun.
Oh. Yeah, I raised the issue of appropriating or the new regime appropriating the EDSA narrative. Or putting it in a new place. So, tatanong ko lang. So, given the movements of the EDSA narrative, its ups and downs. Mm-hmm. What is the meaning of the EDSA narrative now in a new Marcos regime? And again, assuming that this regime may last for a bit of a long time.
Right.
So, what is the new meaning of the EDSA narrative?
Ang sagot ko dyan, no, there's this book by this political scientist Nancy Bermejo, no, Ordinary Citizens in Extraordinary Times, no.
Oh.
And it speaks of how ordinary people, what we call the masses, the voters, the citizens, di ba? How they behave during the interwar years in Europe, di ba? In between World War I and World War II, how ordinary citizens can be both a friend and an enemy of democracy. It depends, really, right? So we tend to romanticize the people as always being part of democratic struggles, democratic consolidation, but at times they are the ones that, you know, that propel rabble-rousers, populists, and authoritarian nationalists into power, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have seen that in our own recent political history. No? Mm-hmm. So I would like to see, and I'd like to remember EDSA, in which ordinary citizens, no, became friends and even defenders of democracy. Ordinary Filipino citizens really came out and struggled and really staked out in order to regain the freedoms that we desperately needed. And those freedoms that up to now, the current generation are enjoying. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So if only for that, no, EDSA should be remembered. And commemorated. And the challenges that happened after EDSA should also become enduring lessons about the pitfalls of democracy that is not defended.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I always say democracy is like a plant that should be nurtured, watered, and taken care of so that it will take root. If not, it will die. No? Mm-hmm. Hindi natapos ang pagdepensa sa demokrasya noong 1986, no.
Mm-hmm.
Kailangan tuloy-tuloy yan inalagaan, diniligan at inaruga para mag-usbong ang tunay na demokrasya sa bayan natin, no.
Yeah.
And that challenge, tapos na kami yung henerasyon namin eh, di ba? Mm-hmm. Dapat nasa mga susunod na henerasyon na yan, no. So, if only for that, the triumphs, victory, pitfalls, and failure of EDSA should all be remembered. no? Both by the followers of Marcos and even the followers of the Aquinos and all the rest, no? Because it's not simply about the Marcos and the Aquinos, it's about the Filipino people.
I'm getting emotional at that plant metaphor. It really is, isn't it? Very delicate.
Well, I think Thomas Jefferson was the one who said that the tree of liberty should be watered with the blood of tyrants. But that's a bit too brutal for that one.
Close enough.
I think there's another one about, I forgot who said it, but the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. Yeah.
You're right. Oh. Si ano yan? Si, who was that? Si Edmund Burke.
Edmund Burke. Yeah. Although there's another one said about EDSA, and I said this in the previous episode, but EDSA did not fail. We failed EDSA. So that's another thing.
Who said that?
I'm not sure. Maybe Ed Lingau? I don't know.
Well, we failed EDSA. I don't think so. No. It's also... I put the blame on the leaders.
Okay. All right. Yes.
Ang sa atin lang, we became complacent.
Okay. All right.
Although Ed's a good friend of mine, So
Okay. I have to double check on that. But
regarding with the hindsight, I think nalala ko lang the late Jesse Robredo, Everyday Edsa, which is again as far as his policies are concerned. It's not only about struggling to maintain democracy, but actually letting people inside the institutions.
Right.
So, I think wisdom of hindsight, things would have been different if he survived.
So, yun nga, even yung si Jesse Robredo, it follows that narrative of reformists, no? That they have to die to prove their point, right? So, tapos to be succeeded by a widow, right? So,
yes. Speaking of the other Robredo, I mean, there definitely was an attempt in reviving the quote-unquote EDSA narrative. But I'm just wondering maybe if you can chime in, like, despite the similar, like, nostalgia and the good feelings and the great, you know, demonstration on a lot of people showed up to the pink rallies.
Right.
Why didn't it eventually produce the desired results? You know, what do you think should have happened?
Well, it's all tactical.
Okay.
And strategic, no? VP Leni should have decided earlier whether she would act as a unifier or a candidate, no? And she should have decided earliest, no? Had she known that it would be impossible to unite the opposition, because that was the role of Cory Aquino in 1985, no?
Mm-hmm.
She tried to unite the opposition, no? But the different candidates, no, were all still resistant, and then eventually she decided, I will run, and then Doy Laurel decided to run as vice president, and the rest is history. They wanted to recreate that moment, no? But it was too late in the game because BBM and Sara beat them to it, no? They united first, no? Remember in December of 2021, no? They were all the leading presidential candidates were all almost equally at around 20-30% each, right? It was only when Sara backed out and decided to team up with BBM that BBM started to soar. And at that time, VP Leni lost time when she tried to negotiate with Isko and the rest and Manny Pacquiao. And then they failed. And then it was too late for her to mount a real credible presidential campaign. Of course, the movement was there, but the movement wasn't enough. Right. So kung nagkaroon pa ng konting panahon, baka nakahabol, di ba? Pero yung momentum kasi na kay BBM at Sara na, no? And of course the incumbency advantage was on the Dutertes, right? So while the old man Duterte reluctantly supported BBM in the end because of because of a daughter, no? The rest was history, right? So it was more of a tactical strategic error, but the idea of recreating EDSA, albeit with a different color, no, was there, no? I even mentioned in one of my interviews that it was a people-powered campaign. Right. So there was, of course, that entire trapping of the people power campaign of
1986. Yeah. So where do we go now?
that is the $1 million question.
Yeah, the $1 million
question. I suppose maybe if I can frame it this way, no? I mean, of course, there is a, I mean, it is painful to admit that a lot of, how you say, utilizations and and the channelings of EDSA were
deployment.
Your deployments of EDSA actually failed. So how then should we, you know, carry on and make sure it works? Where some people are arguing maybe we should find something else, you know, or I mean, is EDSA still worth remembering? And you mentioned it is, you know, but maybe
I'll try to. Is there room for a new narrative?
There will always be room for a new narrative, but it should be born out of past narratives, right? So we cannot just, come up with new narratives out of a vacuum. It should be born out of our collective experience as a people and as a nation, right? Both the good and the bad. Right? So I believe that there is room for a new narrative, and that's what we all should aspire for, no? Given the fact that the generational gap is getting wider, both in terms of attitude and worldviews and perspective, and even the technology has brought about hyper-partisanship. No? Of late, I've been trying to push for finding the middle ground, no? Rebuilding the middle, I call it. Yeah? It's looking for the middle ground because of, as we have seen in the past, in the 2022 elections, no? The hyper-partisanship has only exposed the weakness of unconsolidated democracy. No? And, you know, it's, I think it's time for us to look for common grounds, whatever side of the political fence you are. Diba sabi nga ni Matt sa ibang podcast niya after the election, sabi ni Borge, may mga magkakamag-anak na hindi pa rin nag-uusap, no? Because of the election, di ba? So, wag ganon, no? Kasi the way we treat politics in the country is like fandom. Hindi tayo fans, no? Hindi artista yung mga sinusubaybayan natin. We are citizens, no? Di ba? And we should think like citizens. We should act like citizens, no? Hindi tayo fans, no? Yung nagbabardugulan palagi sa Twitter, no? Di ba? Away-away. Hindi ganun, eh, no? So I hope that we can find the moment, no? To rebuild the middle in which Filipinos should start listening and talking to each other again. And only by doing that we can start to restore the health of our democracy and hope for a new narrative beyond EDSA.
Wow.
Pag nagkaroon ng Marcos fatigue.
Marcos fatigue. We can hope.
Well, Marcos fatigue was the picture of Bongbong Marcos in fatigue during the EDSA revolution.
Oh, that's funny. The visual. But we can only wait until that happens. But so far, we'll have to see about that. But
I think it's cyclical, eh, di ba? More or less. No, I subscribe kasi to that notion of cyclical history, you know. You know, for but of course there's agency, you know. It's dependent on the leader now, like if out of the blues BBM suddenly, you know, start to behave and act like a real Democrat, then well, by all means, you're redeemed, no? Your name is already okay, sige, di ba? And you know, let's give him the chance. After all, he's been elected by 31M, right? Mm-hmm. The 31M, right? So yeah, let's give him a chance.
Yeah, it is either vicious or a virtuous cycle.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe our last question, you know, before we wrap this up, but this has been a very, very substantive episode so far. So clearly, to try and recreate EDSA has its limitations. You know, how right. then should we remember EDSA if not like, an exact weapon for the time? You know, but you go. Is there a specific way in how we should remember EDSA? You know, and bring it to forward into the future of the Philippines.
That's a tough one. I think I've answered that in my previous reply.
Okay. it's more like this. Yeah. So it's more like the spirit of like active citizenship rather than
right,
the exact
right.
event. So I think right. that's.
Oh, well, I think, let me think of something. Okay. So, you know, just like what I said, no, EDSA should be remembered for the active participation of citizens in restoring democracy mm-hmm. in the country. Mm-hmm. And if we want to further consolidate democracy, active citizenship and participation are still the necessary ingredients mm-hmm. for a consolidated democracy.
Mm. Wonderful. Okay. Mm-hmm. Borge, anything you'd like to say before we wrap this up?
Dagdag siguro. Regarding remembering EDSA, well, it's also about active citizenship, yes. Mm-hmm. But again, there are so many people who stayed behind, you know, mm-hmm. and also stayed at right. home. So I think for something that we have learned from Professor Bihanki here, from Sir July right now, is, you know, EDSA's narrative was never in isolation. So it was always intertwined with other narratives, counter narratives, sub narratives, competing narratives. But mm-hmm. With regards to active citizenship, yeah, I think there are people who stayed at home. There are people who watched, and probably most of them were the ones who who brought this new regime into power. So meron din yun eh. So there's the lingering challenge of making people more active. Mm-hmm. So
right, and if I remember correctly, Borge, I've been citing you of late because of your you too, Matt. No, I've been citing the both of you for your notion of spectatorship democracy. Yeah. No, mm-hmm. yeah, yun the idea of the fandom, di ba? Para lang nagiging spectator sport, no, mm-hmm. ang demokrasya natin, no, and that is not democracy, no, that is not the kind of democracy that we want. And if we, you know, if there's one positive memory of EDSA, is that in those four brief shining moments, 4 days, I was proud to be a Filipino.
That the question is, can we all be proud to be Filipinos again? Some people,
that's the question. Many are, but not along liberal lines, though.
Gosh, I'm a little.
I think we are at the rupture of identity building right now as a nation. So, tanong ko sa estudyante ko during my last lecture, are we done with nation building in the Philippines? So, it's a matter of who do we think we are?
Yeah. Well, honestly, yeah,
but nation building is a continuing project.
Yeah,
right?
Yes.
It never ends.
Yeah. And despite the, speaking for the inactive Borge, I always, admire that about you, but I would still always value the story of EDSA as it espouses the value of active citizenship. But I think the moral lesson of EDSA is to follow through. You know, even the day after the revolution is just as important. You know, or the value of the revolution is really judged by the day after, really, or the days after.
But
so, yeah.
Actually, you know, as a parting note, no.
Sure.
One of the promises of EDSA was people's people empowerment. No? Mm-hmm. And I think we have failed. Well, there have been attempts in the early post-EDSA period, no, at least with the passage of the local government code, no, and 1991 local government code, and other even the constitution itself had some provisions on people empowerment, but we have again truly failed to institutionalize people empowerment. No? Had we done that during the early years in which the civil society were much stronger, vibrant, and dynamic, no, and formed People's Council as part of our structure of both national and local governance, we would have not seen what we have seen all throughout these decades, right? So, that's one lesson learned, right?
Yeah. I think what EDSA provided us is like a software or the abstract parts of democracy, but what we lacked was the hardware or like the actual bodies and institutions. So it needs to be, a bit of both in order to make it sustainable. Yeah.
And it was also a rupture in the system. It's an opportunity to change things.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It was a rupture.
Yep. It was a critical juncture.
Right? Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think we should. Yeah, it's definitely a learning experience, regardless, you know, which, with your view. Yeah, we should all continue to learn and study the past. Yeah. And speaking of studying of the past, and besides, of course, the what's been talked today, you know, thank you very much, Sir July. Thank you for this very inspiring and very, very substantive and very interesting talk that and conversation we had. But speaking of continuing to study EDSA as an event and as a important ingredient in Philippine nation building and Philippine democracy, let's now move on to recommendations, where we talk about additional works, you know, like movies, books, and materials that can be useful in thinking and discussing this subject. But of course, this episode is sponsored in part by Ateneo de Manila University Press, who now has a sale going on right now for the EDSA anniversary. They now have discounts on their martial law and EDSA related titles. But for viewers of the PI podcast, we have a special discount code for Shopee. So if you want to use this code, please input Aten EDSA, that's ATENEDSA, that's ATENEDSA, for additional 10% discount on the related titles on the Ateneo de Manila University Press. So two particular titles that might be useful for this topic are very fresh publications and books that are, you know, quite quite pricey, but of course, with the discount code, you'd be able to afford it. But with the thick enough actually to provide a lot of materials for to think about and to read about. So first one is the Marcos Era Reader, edited by Patricia Abinales and Lea Castaneda Anastasio, with a lot of works from both senior and the up and coming academics. So you have articles by Manolo Quezon, Abinales, and JC Punongbayan, and our colleague Christian Colliantes. And I think the interesting thing about this particular reader is that it's, while it looks at Marcos the Reader, and for a long time it has been decidedly like anti-Marcos, you know, academics are decidedly anti-Marcos. This particular, well, at least these two particular publications are actually openly critical and quite honest and gray about their evaluations. Like I mentioned, like our colleague Christian Colliantes, she wrote an article on population policy in the Philippines and admitted that, you know, the Ferdinand Marcos in the beginning of his regime actually progressed the population control during his time, but later on, with the lack of momentum, actually lost the potential, and until the Aquino administration that followed him actually regressed because of Catholic like Catholic sentiments. So it's not, so in terms of population control policy, it's actually a bit of a mixed record. Among many other things. So it's not just studying Marcos as a person, but also recognizing him as a product of his time and the product of the Philippines that, you know, that he, so yeah, I think that was from Manolo Quezon's article. And there's a lot of good ones. And the second reader that is coming out of ADMU Press for this occasion is Martial Law in the Philippines, Lessons and Legacies, edited by Edilberto de Jesus and Ivy Rose Basic, which is also an additional compilation of a lot of interesting topics, but most especially like one with a chapter by our very own guest here, Dr. Julio Tehanki, with his chapter Legacies of the Kilusang Bagong Lipunan, Authoritarian Contamination in Philippine Party Politics. So here he talks about how the KBL has been a part of the Philippine politics longer than we had have imagined, and even to this day. Check that out. If you enjoyed what he said here, you'll enjoy reading him as well in this particular compilation. And of course, many other interesting writers in these two compilations. There's a lot of offerings that the Ateneo Press can give for this particular EDSA season. Sir July, do you have any recommendations of your own to provide for this this segment and for our readers and listeners to continue thinking about this topic?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'd like to thank you, Borge, Matt, for inviting me. And it's been a really interesting discussion on the eve of our EDSA celebration under the second Marcos presidency. Mm-hmm. For my recommendation, I would like to ask your listeners to please visit my YouTube channel, mm-hmm. Talk Politics with Julio Tehanki. Subscribe, no, and like, no, my YouTube channel. And then for those of you interested in my body of work, you can visit my site at academia.edu, in which you can download most of my writings for free. No? So if you want to know more about Philippine politics and democratization, election, party politics, please do visit my academia.edu site.
Okay, thank you, Sir July.
Yeah, we will.
We'll definitely put those links on the description. In Borge, any recommendations?
Since you mentioned the day after the revolution, so I'm going to recommend. Well, I hope that our listeners can access this. Well, legally or illegally, who knows? But mm-hmm. you can find Lenin, The Day After the Revolution. So it's a set of writings by Vladimir Lenin in his attempt to try to steer where the Soviet Union would go. And to an extent, some of his anarchist tendencies probably appeared here, because again, communism is about the dissolution of the state. So he entertained those ideas. But I think my main recommendation right now would be, and again, I hope our listeners can find a copy of this one, History as a System by Jose Ortega y Gasset. It's actually a set of essays. So one of the essays is entitled History as a System. So he looked into the complications, the tensions underpinning human history. And basically it's a philosophy of history, but for him, history has more weight than a mere narrative that we tell our children. So I'll just give you one simple quote from Ortega y Gasset. So for him, as far as his analysis goes, looking at the complications of analyzing history, he said that man, in a word, has no nature. What he has is history. So the very essence of what man is founded on how mm-hmm. we identify ourselves, and how we know who we were mm-hmm. eventually determines how we know who we are right now and how we can be. So. But yeah, I hope our listeners can find a copy of this one. And I would mm-hmm. like to plug in a conference. Yeah, this will be on Yeah, this would be on Feb 28.
Ah,
if you have time, I know this one. Toward a nuanced history of the Marcos regime.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we can also put a link up.
Yes.
Of the Marcos era, towards a nuanced history of the Marcos era, approaches, evidence, and contestation. So this, I think, was convened by Dr. Kuraming and our good friend, Carl Mendoza. So,
and you're presenting a paper there too, yeah?
Yeah, I'm presenting a paper on impartiality and political neutrality. So I'm actually extracting impartiality as something distinct from political neutrality, because I've been hurt by people claiming to be neutral while, you know, having very clear biases. So actually, political neutrality was deemed as possible at the level of states, at the level of academic discourse, it's also possible. But my one of my main arguments would be, is it possible for ordinary citizens? And I'm trying to explore. So if you're interested, there are other papers on it as well, looking at the history of the martial law from different perspectives. Nandun rin yata si Professor Tonton Contreras. I think there's also a section.
Yes.
And
ang tanong dyan, Borge,
yeah,
is nuance history of the Marcos regime possible?
Ayun. I think a nuance history may be possible, but how we talk about it may not be. That's a challenge for it. So,
I've read Romel Kuraming's recent book based on his dissertation. It was a very fascinating account of the Tadhana project of Ferdinand Marcos Sr. Diba? So history can be used as a weapon, diba? Politically, diba? Can be weaponized. So anyways, can I add, no? I have four recommendations pala, no? Aside from my own body of work, no?
Yes, sir.
If our listeners, no, can find a way to have a copy of these readings, no, these books, no? The first, of course, is by our very own Leloy Claudio, no? Lisandro Claudio, is Taming People's Power, no? Very eye-opening account, no? The EDSA revolutions and their contradictions, no? And then, of course, the funny thing is that Leloy deconstructed the EDSA revolution, and once the Duterte supporters started citing him, thoughts about his initial writing. So in the reprint, the second edition, second printing of his book, no, he has a very long preface, no,
apology. Maybe
so. And then the other three is of course from our good friend Professor Mark R. Thompson, Democratic Revolutions, Asia and Eastern Europe, in which he compared the people power phenomenon, no, not only in the Philippines but across Asia and Eastern Europe, no, and then another book that I've been using for the longest time is by Kurt Schock, Schock, Unarmed Insurrections, People Power Movements in Non-Democracy. For me, this is one of the best comparative study of people power movements, no, around the world, no. And then the latest is Civil Resistance and Power Politics, the Experience of Nonviolent Action from Gandhi to the Present, edited by Adam Roberts and Timothy Garton Ash. So so I hope our listeners can find ways to have a copy of these books.
So yeah, it's a very generous list of recommendations. So have an homework ng mga listeners. Take your pick, just start one. Yeah. It's a very interesting, very diverse set of views. I suppose, two things to say before we end this. Number one, with regards to a nuanced history, you know, I think I would say that nuance is possible, but I think the question we should ask is nuance towards what direction, you know?
Yep.
Is it possible to nuance in one way or the other, or maybe nuance towards a kind of truth? Can we know? Yeah. And And another thing about... But, yes, sir?
What? You know, new ones is okay, right? Because now's the time to have a fresh look, no? Because, you know, the winds have shifted, no? Political winds have shifted. But yet, at the same time, there's also a danger in trying to nuance history. In the end, who will control the agenda?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah.
So, kasi nuance might result in either a defense, a whitewashing, or a total revision of the past. Yeah. So, I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Kaya nga,
that should be your next
yes,
topic
sir.
For your podcast.
Yeah. Ang sabi ko sa paper ko is nuance is actually just a component. Impartiality is the greater goal. Kasi impartiality is an open challenge.
Yeah.
Right.
Open. Yeah. We'll see.
Yes. And I suppose the last comment to the end this thing on, I just want to raise maybe is, you know, we have always described EDSA as a myth, and I think it should remain as such. But the weird thing is that we still continue to bust myths, you know, like, and the weird thing is it's because it's quote unquote not factual. But I think the importance of myths is not the fact, not necessarily factuality, not because they're factually true, but in a way it contains, for lack of a better word, maybe a spiritual truth, you know, or maybe a moral truth that I think we should remember, with not the exact histories necessarily, but of course the deeper meanings of these myths. So that I think we should keep with it. And the meaning is, I suppose, the spirit of democracy and civic participation, which we all somewhat, well, forwarded and definitely elaborated on this discussion. So, yeah. Anyway, so thank you very much, Sir Julaiti Hanki. We hope this won't be the last. Yes.
Of course.
And thank you. And thanks, Borge, as usual. And we will be back with, again, more nuanced discussions. Maybe that's the next episode. Or on a lot of issues to come.
Impartial
discussions. So the PI podcast is available on Spotify and Anchor. You may send us a message at pipodcastph@gmail.com. But until the next episode,
magandang gabi, mga ka-PI.